Hello and welcome to the Garden Show. I'm Molly Kabler.
And I'm Kitty LaBounty.
And we are doing this absolutely at a distance. We have help in the studio engineering, but we are both at home looking out into our gardens this morning. This is a live call-in version of the Garden Show, and you can call Raven Radio 747-5877 to ask your question live on the air. Have a little patience with us. We're in, again, a new round of technology, both doing this remotely, but we'd be delighted to hear from you. It is a great garden season, and it looks like a beautiful morning and a good couple of days for being in the garden. What are you going to do, Kitty?
Well, I went outside this morning for the first time. No, not the first time in a few days, but it was like, oh, I'm inspired to go outside and mess around in my garden. I guess I was thinking about, well, what have I been doing in my garden? And a couple of days, I was kind of like waiting for the weather to get better. Still waiting for it to get warmer, but I've been transplanting plants. I've been moving things around, making sure that my growing seedlings have adequate amount of light and they have adequate amount of food, and root space. So basically just kind of like minding the things that I've started so I don't go backwards on anything.
Right. So let's talk for just a minute about seedling care. So of course, it's just a big hurdle getting everything organized and then being so successful. When you see those little seeds germinate, it's so exciting. It's that miracle of gardening over and over that we wonder about every year. But for success from the seedlings to your garden, you need to really pay close watch on them. And there's a couple things to know is they obviously want to find the right temperature so that they're not too hot, but they can't be cold. But once they germinate, if you've had them in a warm spot, a cooler spot is probably better. And then we've talked about this before. It's all about the light.
Yes, the light is probably the biggest issue, making sure all those little seedlings have enough light. So my windowsills are full, my greenhouse is full, and then I still have a set of the youngest plants are under a couple of different LED light setups I have. So there, I'm trying to really kind of make sure they're optimally produced. They'll get light in the windowsill, but those young ones I think need a little bit more of a boost. So I have this wonderful little setup of red and blue lights, red and blue LEDs, because they have that nice spectrum that the plants are looking for. And then they're on little cables that I can make them go up and down on. So, you know, as the plants get bigger, I can move them. So yes, light, sorry, rattling on there.
Yeah, no worries. Then the next thing to worry about is the pot and the root room. Is there enough soil and a big enough pot for root room? And if your seedlings are pretty small and you don't think the roots have taken over all of the volume in there, then you can just keep them in the small pots. But if you get seedlings that are really growing actively and you don't think you're going to plant them out for a while, you may want to what we call pot them on. And that means move them from their small volume into the bigger volume pot. And if you're using seed starter trays with little tiny cubes, or you're using those little peat pellets that inflate up and grow seeds, those guys, neither of those are going to offer a whole lot of nutrition or room for a really fast growing seedling. They're a great place to start, but then you might need to pot them on. And then the other thing to think about is you might need to fertilize your seedlings just very lightly or very gently. And kind of a good strategy would be some sort of a liquid fertilizer at a very reduced strength, so that they're just getting enough. What about you, Kitty?
That's about what I do. So I do pot mine on because I'm like, the weather's not that great. It was 41 degrees out on my porch, which is not like super vegetable growing temperatures for a lot of things. So I'm not really ready to put them out in the ground. So I put them up in bigger pots, and the ones that I'm going to keep in the house, I actually still use clean potting soil just because I don't want any little insects hatching, you know, that, you know, insects lay their eggs. There's stuff going on out in the garden that I don't necessarily want in the house. So I will use purchased potting soil for the ones that I'm potting on, even though I'm really past that damping off sort of stage. But I don't want all of nature in my house, so I go ahead and do that.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, I kind of keep them back and forth.
Yeah. 747-5877 if you want to ask us a question or weigh in on what's going on in your garden or in your almost garden. The other thing that happens is once it's time, and I don't think we're in any rush. I mean, we say this over and over, the May 15th is our projected frost-free. But what that means is the air temperature. And if it's cool and rainy like it has been, even though the air temperature is above freezing, we haven't had weather that's really warming soil. And that's the two-factor combo for plants. It's the air temperature and the soil temperature. So if you have really cold soils, you're not going to gain much by moving your plants out unless they're the ones that thrive. And there are a few of those, peas, spinach, some other ones you can either seed directly, or if you started them inside, they can go out. But all of your more traditional vegetables that like a warmer temperature and a warmer soil, you're in no rush sending them out. And then once you are ready to go, you want to do the hardening off. And I wanted to see if we could talk, Kitty, just a little bit about hardening off and the point of why do we do this? Why are we being hard asses to our plants?
I like that term, Molly. So I do move my seedlings in and out. So they're in the greenhouse or in the house, and I put them outside to get them kind of used to that tougher atmosphere. It's a little breezier. It's a little brighter. But I don't let them go cold turkey outside. I actually cover them up with some of my row cover because the light change, even though they're getting light in the house or in the greenhouse, the light's a lot more intense and unfiltered outside. So that's my biggest thing, is to do that. But basically, we're just trying not to like shock the kajibis out of our little babies.
Right. And you need to often do a hardening off piece for transplants that you're bringing from the store. Oftentimes they've been in a sheltered condition, and also they've also been inside or coming from a greenhouse. So if that's the case, they deserve a chance to harden off as well.
I've heard some people have small fans either in their greenhouse or in their growing area in the house, and that does help and kind of toughen them up if you have that sort of situation. So maybe your big thing in that case is that you just need to watch the light and the temperature. But I, honestly, when I put everything out, it's pretty much under Rime anyway, because I feel like that gives them a little bit of an edge, warmth-wise, insect-wise, and the occasional monster deer that wanders through.
So we have a question that's come in on the phone, and the question is about the soil. So do we have a caller, or are we answering our question without the audio? Okay. So the question, if I understand it right, is would it improve our soil to put it in the oven at 200 degrees? Okay. Not sure exactly what that means.
I can interpret. I think I'm going to interpret it.
Okay. Go for it.
So my interpretation is that by improve, you mean kill off any potential pathogens in the soil or insects. In that case, yes, there is an oven. You put your soil in the oven. You don't want it to be too thick on the pan, whatever you're going to put it in. And then I let it, sit in there for probably, if I was doing this, I stopped doing this after I decided I didn't like the smell, but you've got to like have it in there for about an hour, if not more. If you get the soil up to about 180 degrees, seems like that's where you're trying to go for. So you'll be measuring the temperature of the soil. So if that's the improvement you're looking for, yes. The smell is not my favorite, though.
All right. So this might be a time when people are not wanting to go and purchase new soil or have it to hand. So baking soil is an option. We understand that. And Kitty's speaking from experience about it not smelling good. But whatever it takes, I think is I think it's great. That's the way we are having this spring in particular. Thanks so much for your call. And we'd love to hear how it goes for you. 747-5877 is the number to call here this morning. Kitty and I are live at home on the garden show with you. And we'd love to hear from you. We've been talking about hardening off and the idea of that this is how you take care of your own seedlings and also your small transplants that are coming from the commerce and coming out of probably a greenhouse. And of course, it's both the bright sun that's going to scorch, potentially sort of sunburn a tender plant. It's the breeze that they're not used to inside, and then the variability of the temperatures, both air and soil. So you think about that, that's a lot of conditions to live through if you're a brand new little seedling.
So it's well worth the time to, you know, carry your plant trays inside and outside multiple times so you don't lose your work. I mean, if you're waiting till like the 1st of June to put them out, you know, you might be able to just like, okay, great, I'm putting you guys outside and I'm covering you up with Remae, planting you, and I'm done. In that case, just water them up. I mean, it's not a perfect science. You know, there's probably because every condition's a little bit different, every site's a little bit different. So in general, what we're advising you to do is if you've taken the time to grow these seedlings, take good care of them, basically. But if you're tired of them and you just need them to go outside, well, you do what you got to do.
Yeah. And for many people, that's the garden fits into the rest of their lives and they don't have enough time to fuss back and forth. And so they might not harden off. They might just go straight out to the garden. And if that's the case, I would super recommend Remae. If you don't have any Remae or that spun bonded row cover, even a light sheet of newspaper or a light old bed sheet or something like that, that would work as well.
Oh, you know what else works? If you're a milk drinker and you have a bunch of those plastic milk jugs, you can cut the bottom out, put them over the small plants, just take the lid off, you know, so they get some air. And that'll give them a little bit of a break, too.
All right. So we had a question last week about rhododendron and damage to somebody's rhododendron leaves. And Kitty has been being the scientist sleuther on this, and she has she has worked on what some of the options, what some of the ideas are that could be happening. One thing that's a challenge for us is that we haven't been able to see the actual leaves to know what it looks like. But Kitty, share some of that interesting stuff you found out.
Okay, so, you know, Google is my friend. I just have to say that. You have to kind of weed through things and see if it's appropriate or not. But I tend to look for things that are cooperative extension oriented or things that are from known breeders. And I found something from Greer, from Harold Greer, who wrote a book called Rhododendron Basics, basically. And there's a lot of good pictures about different pests of rhododendrons. Looks like there's root weevils that can be chewing, making big holes in leaves. There's also some aphids. There's some other sawflies that are out there and caterpillars. I would think, you know, they both all sound a little tough. And the one bummer part about this website that I looked at was really the only controls they talk about are basically poisons. But reading through the site a little bit more carefully, I think the other things I can add to that would be hygiene. So check underneath your rhododendron if you've had problems with this, you know, remove kind of those old dead leaves and that old material underneath because the eggs are being laid actually in the soil and in the mulch. So maybe do a little bit of cleanup down there. And as always, you know, try to find larvae. I mean, sometimes what you can do if you want to find the actual pest is put some paper underneath the leaves and like kind of bang on the leaves a little bit and the larvae or insects can fall down on that paper and then you can actually get a good look at what they are. So as always, the, you know, knowing what something is key.
The other thing to think about your rhododendron is if if it doesn't seem to be healthy and you can't tell if it's a pest or nutrition, that can be doubly challenging. So you want to think carefully about, as Katie said, the hygiene factor and the nutrition factor. Some, in Mother Nature and similarly in your garden, there are pests. There are less than perfect conditions, but the more you can improve the health of any plant, in this case, the rhododendron, with proper fertilizer and proper mulching, your rhododendron may have a chance to live through whatever the pest infestation is. And what we find is when you start introducing insecticides and other scary kind of pest control, is you knock off the balance in your garden where something can be virulent for a while, but the rest of the balance of pests on the pest might help take care of it. And I know this sounds kind of crazy, but the more you can allow, the regular biota in your garden to take care of what's there, the better you're going to have, the better health you're going to have in all of your plants. So that wasn't easy for me to say, but so
But you did
it's the whole
it.
hygiene thing. So it's managing for optimum health of plant will help them survive a pest. And we've talked about this before, but the pest I'm managing for is the rust on my raspberries, which I know is something that I will never actually get away from. But I've been doing just fine with it. And one of the things I did, and this is similar to what you might want to do on your rhododendron, is I carefully raked and removed all of the mulched leaves and the dropped leaves from last year and burnt that. And then I put down fresh compost, a tiny bit of more nutrition, and then mulched it over with fresh compost from the greenhouse, from the compost bin. And of course, I don't ever compost my rust-laden raspberry leaves. I always burn those. And my raspberries look great.
Right. So the plant I'm get concerned about because of pests that basically lay their eggs and overwinter in the soil are actually the ones that attack currants and gooseberries. These cute little introduced monster sawflies. And what I do is the same thing. I clean below the plant really carefully. I read that you can try diatomaceous earth, putting that down in the soil. So I've done a little bit of that. And the other thing is actually putting another, I put a little more seaweed actually around my currants to see if that also would discourage those little sawflies. But in the end, I'm going to watch my leaves as they come out and look on the underside and just try to be as vigilant as possible with those. So hygiene, food, vigilance, and actually, I'm going to say this one more time. Actually, try to find the pest. So you really know what it is because that's key to interrupting that life cycle somehow. There will be a way. And you won't save everything. Sorry. I mean, you can do all the right things, and some of your plants are just going to succumb. But in general, those rhododendron diseases that I was looking up that people were talking about are the pests. They won't generally kill your rhododendron. It seems like it's very rare for that to happen. It just doesn't look as pretty for a while.
And many of them are probably not real prevalent here. And the thing to watch for would be if you have a new rhododendron coming in, because it may easily have been grown somewhere where there are more pests, rhododendron specific pests. So it's always nice to carefully take a look at a new plant that you're bringing in from the nursery and check for any pests on it before you move it into your garden.
Sounds like we have a question about pea plants and soils. Am I reading that correctly?
Yeah, we'd love to take the call live on the phone if possible. Hello, you're on the garden show.
Hi. I don't know if
Great, we
this
hear you.
I'm
Is this
assuming.
Anna?
Oh, yes, it is. Yeah.
All right, great. Go ahead. What's your question?
Okay, so we are growing lots of things, but we're growing pea plants, and we have a few of them, and I have two questions about them. So all but one of them, we moved into bigger pots and did it in a mix of potting soil and compost and like I think that's it. But anyway, those ones don't seem to be doing as well as the one that is in its original potting soil. And I'm wondering if that was a silly thing to do, or if you have any thoughts on that decision.
So how long ago did you transplant them?
Maybe a week ago about a week ago.
Sometimes it takes plants a little bit of time to recover from that transplant process. And I don't, you know, I'm not being accusatory, but sometimes, you know, when you tip them out of the original pot and you put them in the new one, sometimes, you know, plants, it takes them a little bit to recover from that shock. And they need to get watered up. The other thing is are we talking flower peas or food peas?
Food peas.
So those, I would think about actually hardening those off and getting them outside, to be honest with you.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's
peas are really tough.
Okay, that is good to know. So we have like done a little bit of hardening them off, like I think a total of 3 or 4 days, not consecutively, outside on the porch. And we're wondering if it's just like, if it's okay to just move them on outside full time now.
For most plants, I wouldn't necessarily recommend it, but peas, you can actually start those straight in the garden this time of year. So I think they'll do pretty well if you plant them out into the garden soil. Definitely cover them for a day. And then maybe for half a day, the second day, if possible, especially if it's really sunny. If it's cloudy, you're probably okay. And I wouldn't pot them on in the house for peas. I'd move them out, same as Kitty's recommendation.
But I don't think, you know, you weren't silly to try and give them a bigger pot. But plants do take a little bit to recover from that. So don't kick yourself. But yeah, I would put them outside and make sure you set up your fence for your peas to grow on, like maybe almost before you plant them, because then setting up the fence won't disturb your new little plants.
Did you have another question, Anna?
I think that is it. That was really helpful. Thank you.
You're most welcome.
All right.
Yeah. Sorry, Molly.
Oh, I just want to say, Anna, thanks for the call. And I was thinking about this weekend as I moved some seedlings. I have some seedlings in my greenhouse. And of course, it's always the curse of you've sowed them too thickly because you don't believe they're actually going to germinate. And I do this every year for, you know, years. But so I was transplanting some of them out into the garden bed. And I reminded myself that seedling root systems are incredibly delicate, and that's the part that makes it difficult for the transplant and why they get disrupted so easily when you move them from one pot to another. And oddly enough, your best bet is to use a pencil or a tiny little utensil to tease them apart and not handle them. And if you are going to handle them, handling them by the leaves is better than handling them by the roots.
Ooh, I like to handle mine by the stems. But I agree, handling them by the roots is definitely problematic. I definitely don't do that. And I tend to use like a popsicle stick or an old plastic spoon or fork to kind of dig in there very carefully. So basically, I'm hardly handling them at all. But I was actually pretty good this year about not overplanting, maybe because I was stuck at home and I had more time.
Yeah, I've done a lot more starting both in the greenhouse and my garden is ahead. In fact, I'm anxiously waiting for warmer soil and warmer weather because normally I'm not so on the ball, but I've been home so much and you may be experiencing this as well. 747-5877 is the number. We do have time to take another call or two. Love to hear what's going on in your garden.
Yeah, it's funny. I've been just asking the weather to get warmer is mostly what I've been doing. I feel like I'm just like kind of maintaining my garden indoors. I've been slowly adding sand and gathering seaweed and doing things that kind of are building up and getting ready. just waiting for that warmer weather. It seemed like we had really warm weather for a while, or warm and or sunny weather at least, and then it kind of fell apart. So it kind of put us all back a little bit in terms of our timing. But just a reminder to myself and to everyone else, it's May 1st, so it's not too late. We're doing fine.
The other thing to remember is the weather could turn. The pattern has been warm at night for this time of year. So in the 40s in the Sitka area, and that's pretty warm nights for early May and late April. But we haven't had those warm days, and it's the combination that is really going to make your garden pump. It's awfully fun, though, to see the early perennials and the bulbs blooming. So those are definitely the high interest in my garden right now. The primroses are in full blooms. The erythroniums are coming on. The daffodils.
Yay, daffodils. we actually have another question about leggy seedlings. And is there any hope for them? And this is not on the phone. So leggy seedlings. I saw someone do something on YouTube. Again, I'm home more, so I'm watching more garden videos. And they actually trimmed the seedling. So just wait. It was like, it might be worth trying. So they had really long leggy seedlings, and they had a setup so that they had some root tone, you know, the material that you can use that's going to encourage rooting in seedlings. So they did the cutting. They cut the top of that seedling off. They kept the top, dipped that in root tone, and then replanted it. And they were who knows, but this was a fairly reliable source. So you could try, you know, that with maybe half of your leggy seedlings and see what happens, or you could just give them more light. You could replant them deeper. The easiest way to avoid it is, of course, avoiding it. But you're there, so try it. You don't have a lot to lose, right?
Right. I wouldn't do all of them, though, because some of them, though they're leggy, they might make it to be planted out. It might take them a little bit longer to recover and get into, a place where they're being productive. We do
exactly.
have another call, which maybe we could jump to. And that question is there such a thing as too many herring eggs in a raised bed? And do we have the caller on the line?
I was going to say, I have an answer for that. You could send me over to get some of them.
Kitty's going to help you out with too many herring eggs. I think there could be too many herring eggs in a bed to plant right straight into the bed. But in terms of if you have time to wait and let that digest down into your garden bed, you're probably okay.
Yeah. And just to go back to that other question when I was suggesting cutting the heads off of the seedlings. Yeah, don't do all of them that way. But hey, you're not going to lose a lot if you try a few of them. And even without that, depending on the plant, sometimes if you just put that stem right in the water, it'll be fine. You just want to cut off like the lowermost leaves so that they're not in the water. So you want to have just stem in the water and roots should form. I don't know. Let us know if you try it.
Right. So, Kitty, have you put too much herring eggs in a bed? We're just about out of time, but we could discuss this topic for a minute. Okay, well, I actually have. So what I did was I put too many herring eggs and seaweed on my rhododendrons, and they created this too thick decomposing mat. And what I've since learned in spades is that rhododendrons need air at their roots, and they don't like a very thick layer of decomposing herring eggs. And that could be true for any number of plants. So what you don't want to do is your active perennials or shrubs have a thick mat. That you want to go lightly with herring eggs. But if you have an empty bed and you have a chance to turn and really get them composted up, you're probably okay.
Yeah, pretty much the herring eggs in my yard go to my vegetable bed, and maybe just a little bit of a scattering in my perennials. And I am leery of giving my rhododendrons too much of anything other than just their tiny little bit of annual semi-annual fertilization.
Right. So we're just about out of time. But the other question was, how soon can you plant in that bed? And it all depends. If you're planting a robust transplant, you can probably go sooner. If you're trying to plant a seed, that's going to be tough. And one way to work around this is put a new fresh layer of compost or soil on top so that your initial plant transplants hit that and go down into the rest of the herring eggs, but not get planted straight into it. So that's one strategy for getting around to a bed full of herring eggs.
Right, or move the herring eggs aside where you're actually going to put the seedling, right. So it doesn't go right into the mass.
Right, so we'll be back next week. You've been listening to The Garden Show Live.